Hello, everybody. My name is Eli Hollingsworth, and welcome back to Against the Current, A The Chosen podcast for the first time in like a year. It's been a year since I think I've sat down to record an episode specifically for the podcast, which is pretty crazy because you'd think I'd do more, but I've moved over more to YouTube, which I'm happy where the YouTube channel is going. And if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel, Against the Current, A The Chosen podcast, same name, it's easy to find. You can go ahead and subscribe to that, please, if you haven't. We've got interviews, video interviews, videos about The Chosen, theorizing, that kind of thing. So the value of the podcast and the YouTube channel is that here you can hear my reviews of every episode, my breakdowns, just kind of talking through the events that happen in each episode and what I think, which I don't know why people want to hear that, but they do. So you can check that out here. And then on the YouTube channel, you can subscribe for more fun stuff. I mean, the interviews are still posted here on the podcast, but you can go watch the interviews on YouTube, or you can watch more videos that are shorter and more in-depth about everything happening in the episodes or current Chosen events in Chosen land on the internet. So hello everybody, welcome back, thank you so much for listening and tuning in. So The Chosen season 4 is finally here. I am so excited. I know everybody else is so excited. We are finally to season 4, which we've been waiting for like a year now. It was beginning of February that the season 3 episodes finished coming out, episodes 7 and 8 in theaters, and now with season 4 we are, every episode is going to be in theaters, which is extremely exciting. That's awesome. I apologize for the people who can't get out to the theater. I know there's always people I see in comment sections, or I see like Chosen comment sections and stuff, people just saying you can't get out of the theater because you don't want to, or that kind of thing. That's fine, and that's totally cool. So I will do a spoiler-free review of season 4, episode 1 right here for those who haven't seen it yet or are waiting for, or in another country, you know, too, because The Chosen is coming to, I believe, the U.S. and Canada. And then in March, it's coming to other international places, which is pretty crazy that we're at this point now. The Chosen is expanding, and it's awesome, and everybody gets to see it, and that's completely amazing. Super excited about that. Everything happening in Chosen land where it's expanding and growing and more people are seeing the show is all super fantastic. So that's awesome. But I will do a spoiler-free section. So review of season 4, episode 1. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I think it's one of the stronger episodes, the strongest starts. Okay, I'll say this. One of the strongest starts to a season in the show so far. It always starts out a little slower. Season 1, season 2. Well, okay, season 2 was probably the best start to a season, in my opinion. But seasons 1, 3, even 2 as well, and 4, the starts are a little bit slower. It kind of builds you into the season. You know, you start off slow, and then you go off on this big emotional journey that leaves you crying. And episode 1 of season 1 was also very good with the Mary Magdalene and that kind of gut punch ending. Season 2 with the whole tying in the future and flashing forward and that kind of thing was awesome. Season 3 was very good too with the Sermon on the Mount and the introduction of Judas joining Jesus, that kind of thing. And this is definitely one of the stronger ones as well. There's a lot happening in the Roman party, and obviously there's a big event that will mess with certain people's head space, and it's going to blow your mind. It's going to knock your head off. Nobody says that. I'm just making head analogies for no reason. And it's definitely, I had family members and people around me who said they thought it was pretty slow, that there was a lot of dialogue, but there usually is. And it's a dialogue-driven show because it's a drama, and it's a first-century drama, and it's not a Marvel movie. So I would say it's a bit slower, but the pilots usually are. So I can't say a ton without getting into spoiler territory, obviously, but it's still everything we love about The Chosen. It's biblical moments that we know and love with a new perspective on them. In this episode, they do get a little more creative. They flirt the line a little bit of, you know, what did this really happen? Is this plausible that this happened? Which is fine, and I don't care. But there was a specific scene where I was like, I'm surprised they went that far, and what they portrayed as maybe happening there. So it still is very good. It's more of what everything we love about The Chosen. It's the characters, the humor, the interesting backstories, the believable performances, the funny moments, and relatable, quirky humor, as well as the dramatic and sad moments that really tug at the heartstrings because of all of the quirky and relatable characters. Not quirky and relatable in the sense of modern Disney leads, but in the sense that, you know, you can really connect to the characters and they really do feel like real people living in the first century, and you can understand their struggles, you can understand what they're going through. All of the stuff that we have always loved from The Chosen, it continues here. I mean, there's no less of it here. And episode 1 ends on a bit of a downer, but, you know, precursor to the tons of grief we're about to experience in later in the season and later in the show and the coming seasons, which none of us are really excited for. But it is funny to see how, you know, as Chosen fans, because we love to have fun, right? We love fun. We love to have fun with spoons and the fatted goose that Philip talks about, a fat goose. Yes, that's what it was. So we have love to have fun, and we're very obsessive. We obsess over little things, which is great, and I love that about our Chosen community. But it is kind of weird. You know, we've become obsessed with watching people die. That's what we signed up for, and we always knew that's what we signed up for since the beginning, which is just hilarious to me. And we're all, you know, willing to go through it because it's worth it, because we're doing it together, as Simon says in Season 2, Episode 3, when they were around the campfire. Anyway, so that's really all I want to say without getting into spoilers. So if you haven't seen the episodes, I feel bad, but I highly recommend you try as hard as you can to go check them out. It's life-changing, as The Chosen usually is. Now, Episodes 1, 2, and 3 is what you're going to see in theaters. Like, this episode is a review of Episode 1, but you will see in order 1, 2, and 3. You can't escape it, unless you just buy a ticket, go and see Episode 1, and then walk out, which would be a waste of money. But I would highly recommend you go see it, and you're going to see 1, 2, and 3 together, so you can listen to this episode and Episode 2 and 3. My reviews of Episodes 1, 2, and 3 are all coming out at the same time. I believe midnight Thursday night, which is when The Chosen premieres. So I will have just seen Episode 3. So it's awesome. I love it. You should definitely go check it out. Spoiler-free section is over. So if you haven't seen it, we will get into spoilers. And I'm sorry about that, but that's just the way it is. I expect you have seen the episodes by now. And even if you don't care about spoilers, that's totally fine. I'm not saying you can't listen. So Season 4, Episode 1, which I don't know the title of yet. I'm sorry about that. I don't know what the title is called. I'll change that in the title of the episode later, but first we get a recap. We got that premiere. I don't know if we're going to get it in theaters, but we got the recap of Season 3, which is always nice because it's good to refresh on everything that happened. And then we get this interesting intro bit with young Mother Mary as she's pregnant with Jesus, and her interaction with Elizabeth, which was an interesting Bible moment that I wasn't expecting to see before. I was not expecting to see this particular... I mean, we were expecting that Episode 1 was going to be about John the Baptist, and I actually did theorize that a while ago when they were filming. I saw a little picture of a baby, and I was like, oh, I wonder if this is John the Baptist. I wonder if this is him as a baby, since Episode 1 is about him and him getting beheaded. And it turns out that that is exactly what we got. And we get with Mother Mary. She comes to Elizabeth and Zechariah, and Zechariah has the little tablet, and we get a little funny moment with that, which was great to see. And Mary starts talking to Elizabeth, and we get that scene from the Bible where we get told about Elizabeth had John the Baptist in her stomach, and she met with Mary, and John the Baptist leapt for joy when he was near Jesus in Mary's stomach. So that's just all awesome. I love that scene. That was a great way to start this episode, because, again, this episode is really centered around John the Baptist and his story, because we haven't seen his story yet in the show. It's good that they showed, and yes, this does come from the Bible, for those who don't know, this story of John the Baptist and all the stuff we see in the episode really does come from the Bible. When it comes to his backstory and how he was born and the thing with Zechariah, his dad. Very interesting stuff, and I love that story, and I love that it was included here. Great intro. So after we get the intro, lovely Walking on Water theme music, which we love, then we get Salome practicing her dance, and her instructor is teaching her, and she's trying to get this perfect. I like this scene. It was an interesting twist on what we've seen before in The Chosen. We don't usually see this type of thing in The Chosen. Like, she's really dancing. It really does look cool. And we get Herodias coming in, and this is about her plot to get Herod to behead John the Baptist because of John the Baptist's comments that he made about Herodias. It's a confusing situation, but she was like, there's multiple Herods in the family, and like, she's married to this Herod Hunter, Herod Antipas, and like, she slept with his brother or something, and like, she had an affair or something, and John the Baptist called her out on it, and then it insulted her, so she didn't like that, so she wanted to have him beheaded. And so in order to do that, she's having Salome, her daughter, practice this dance for Herod. So when she does it, then Herod will say, you can have whatever you want. And she's supposed to ask for the head of John the Baptist, which is an interesting scene. It's cool to see the build up to that, you know, see the precursor, how it's being thought of, the inception of the idea, and how it's being executed. So all very cool stuff. And then we get James and John helping with Zebedee's oil business. And they're preparing these oils and spices to be taken to the synagogue to then be inspected and approved by the officials, the Pharisees there, to approve them for use. And this is part of Zebedee's growing olive oil business, which is being headed up by Judas, who we see in the trailer for season 4, is going to start stealing money from, as with the, with you know, compensation, or he's getting ideas from Bob Haddad, sorry, his mentor from season 2, who we saw with him, who he left in order to follow Jesus in season 3, episode 1. He's going to be back, and he's going to be giving Judas ideas about, you should be taking compensation for your work, and he starts taking from the olive oil business, because he built it, after all. And we see more in season 3, episode 1, or season 4, episode 1, sorry, that Judas is starting to get ideas and starting to want to jump ahead. He's not fully trusting Jesus and God and God's plan. For the ministry, he thinks he knows better, which, as we all know, when we start to think we know better than Jesus and God, that's where things get messy, and that's where pride comes before fall. And that's something that we actually will see probably a few times in this season. Something with little James, or Big James, maybe comes later with that. So anyway, so the business is growing, the olive oil business is going. James and John are helping with that. Tamar and Rayma show up at the olive oil business, and Rayma is there, which is cool. And then Barnaby and Shula also show up at the olive oil business, which is always fun to see. We love Barnaby and Shula. They're great, fantastic characters. Two original chosen characters who we've seen since season 1, and we love to see it whenever they come back. Really enjoyed this scene. It's cool. It's always fun to see the banter between the group, and we're just getting to know them as characters, which is the point of the scenes, and I just love these moments. I always do. They're really fun, and these are what make the dramatic moments so much more impactful when we hear these parts. And we're getting to know the characters, and we're getting to know how they act, or how it's proposed that it would be plausible that they would act, right? Because The Chosen is not stating all of this happened, but it's stating, hey, what if it did? And it is really awesome. I love it because I get to think more about the Bible when I read it. I picture what's happening more. I picture the scene. I picture the scenario. So that's awesome. Anyway, I don't want to ramble. So anyway, Joanna is getting ready. The officials are getting ready for the big party that night, where Salome will dance for Herod and ask for the head of John the Baptist. But first, Joanna talks with her husband. And apparently her husband is in on the plot to kill John the Baptist. He doesn't seem fully in on it. Now, Joanna's husband is an interesting character. And we don't fully know what his involvement is going to be. I don't know if he does have a specific purpose in the rest of the show, or maybe just an imposing force for Joanna to be pushing her towards more being in the ministry. We'll have to see if he has a bigger purpose in the show later. We know he's going to be more in the show, in season 4 at least, later, up when Palm Sunday is happening. And he's somebody who is controlling these people. We see him in the trailer. So that'll be interesting to see him. I wonder what his involvement will be, if he'll have a bigger part or not. But anyway, that scene with him and Joanna is very interesting. I say very interesting a lot. There's a lot, guys, there's a lot of very interesting things in the show, okay? All right. So, Simon Z and Judas are doing laundry. We saw this in the behind-the-scenes video. This is the behind-the-scenes part where we got the shot of the pride flag that ended up being a huge debacle for The Chosen. And, you know, when those stuff like that happens, it's always fun to, you know, get to debate. It's not always fun to debate. It does definitely make my job harder when I'm trying to tell my friends, hey, you know, watch The Chosen. Didn't they have a pride flag? Oh, yes. Yes, they did. Yeah, so, but, you know. You can't do anything about that. And The Chosen's work ethic, their regime, their brand, their core company values are, I mean, they're just unprecedented for a show like this. It really is cool, you know, that they include everybody. They say, hey, even if, yes, we do have a LGBTQ, or, like, I don't know, gay, but, like, I don't, like, a LGBTQ, he affirms LGBT, he has a lifestyle like that, obviously. He has a pride flag on his gear. Obviously, he is involved, or he supports that lifestyle somehow, saying, hey, he was at the season 4 world premiere. I saw him saying, "Hey, you don't have to be a Christian or be a religious person to, you know, work on the show. You can believe whatever you want, and even if us as Christians, maybe there's in the Bible it does specifically state, you know, homosexuality is a sin. So to say, hey, you know, we don't the work you do is the most important thing. And Dan, steady Dan, he does hold the camera very well. I mean, we watch these scenes, and the camera is very well done. The camera work is awesome, so it doesn't really matter. And that's just a great work ethic. And it's, you know, I don't know why it is, but it's groundbreaking. And that's kind of sad that that's, you know, oh, it's never been done before. It's kind of sad that that's how the status quo has been, but, you know, because you wouldn't want to be in the workplace and Christians complain when people, they don't get to wear a Jesus Loves You shirt or whatever. So why would we treat unbelievers the same way? And, you know, we're supposed to be of the world, Great Commission, go out to the world, make disciples of all nations. So, including those people in our environment is the only way that we're ever going to reach them, right? And it's not an attitude of we have this. I mean, we've been given the gift of salvation or knowledge of Christ and the Bible and that kind of thing. So since we have this great news that we love, wouldn't we love to share it with everyone? Anyway, that's just me talking. Whatever. So Simon Z and Judas are doing laundry. And this was interesting because, as I said before, Judas is questioning Jesus. He's saying, well, I see ways we could be doing this better. And he's not fully trusting Jesus. And it makes sense. I love the way they portray Judas in the show. Sorry, I'll slow down. I'm sorry. I love the way they portray Judas in the show because he is, it makes sense why this type of person would be opposed, not opposed to Jesus, but how he would go down the wrong path. And this is, Judas just has the main central sin that affects all of us, right? And that we all have to look out for, and that is pride. That's something that anyone can struggle with. It's one of the biggest sins ever. I mean, not, okay, God views all sin equally, right? But one of the ones that's easiest to struggle with in ways that you don't even notice. I suspect, and I don't suspect, I think this is very much correlated with kind of the dark side of Dallas Jenkins' story. Not to call out Dallas, he struggled with pride, but he's talked about before how when he was making movies in Hollywood, he was saying, well, I don't have to make specifically Christian movies, but I'm going to make movies with Christian themes, and they're going to reach an audience because these movies are just going to be so good, and everybody's going to like them. And he's talked about it before how, so I suspect if Dallas Jenkins had not been put in a situation with The Resurrection of Gavin Stone, where the movie failed and he kind of lost everything, he went back to ground zero and was prepared to open his heart to anything that God had for him, this is where he would still be. And not to say that I think he's a bit harsh on himself, but not to say he was ever super prideful and just like a jerk and thought he was the greatest and everything, but he was at a point where at least from what he says, and these are just his words, right, that he was at a point in his life where his motivations were not, I just want to do what God wants me to do. It was, I want to, you know, make a name for myself, impact people in a way that, you know, gets people to, you know, praise me and that kind of thing. Not specifically that, again, but, you know, pride works in mysterious ways. So Judas, I think Judas's story, it feels very personal and feels very real. And in art, right, art is more real and more impactful, and it connects with you more when it's more vulnerable, when the creators are sharing their themselves. Like, you have to put a piece of yourself into any good art that you create. So Dallas is, I think, the reason why some of these feel so real, like, you know, the scenes with Simon and Edenor and scenes with other disciples, you know, he's putting a piece of himself into there. So I think Dallas's story very much relates to Judas on the path to wanting success and wanting, you know, money and praise and power. And not, again, specifically that Dallas Jenkins was all in on that, because I think he was still awesome, you know, all the way, because we love Dallas and he's an amazing person. But I think this is partly where some of Judas's story comes from, and the idea of it is great. I love the way that Judas's story is implemented, and he suggests he wants to hire people, and Simon Z mentions he's learning, but he's not wise. And Simon Z talks about, this is something that Allah talked about when I talked to him at the teal carpet, is that he has all these skills. Like, he's a director, he's a stunt actor, he's a stunt guy, he does tons of stuff, he's awesome, he's a very talented individual, he's an actor, he's awesome. And he says he has all these skills, and he doesn't necessarily use all of them, but it does allow him to, you know, connect with the cinematographer more, since he understands where the perspective he's coming from, or, you know, connect with the other people on set, because he's been in a lot of these roles before, so he knows more what they're trying to do and how they're thinking. He says that kind of relates to Simon Z's story this season, where he's feeling like he learned all of this martial arts stuff, and he learned all this how to fight, and he was a warrior, and now Jesus is telling him, you know, put aside all that, you're following me, and we don't fight, right? So, and he's kind of feeling that he's putting aside all his previous skills for Jesus, but he's using them in different ways, and he's learning how to implement them in different ways. Judas also suggests, you know, even taking a small number of taxes or money from the people who they fed at the feeding of the 5,000, they would have enough to fund the mission forever. And Simon Z says, you're telling him to do it the way you would do it before you met him, which is what we heard in the behind-the-scenes clip. And he says, you should be asking for whom his charity was lessened, which is a cool line. I like that little food for thought. And then John and James come to the synagogue. That's the next scene. They come to approve the spices and the oil that they have, and Jairus and Rabbi Akiva, they come in. Big James stays with Tamar, which I thought was interesting. It looks like Big James might be you know, looking at Ian tomorrow a little bit. I don't know. I'm not saying anything. We love romance, right? I don't want to insinuate anything that's not there, but that's what came off to me. Anyway, so they're testing the oil. They're looking for a new vendor, and they accept Zebedee's oil. And then they go with Jairus into his office. And these scenes are always interesting and important because they're showing the politics of the time. This is the politics of how things worked at the synagogue with the oils and the spices and what they would use for either anointing or how they would accept them into the synagogue, that kind of thing. Always interesting to see, right? It's important because it helps us understand the time, the period, the cultural aspects. It's not just giving you the Bible because you can read them. First of all, you can read the Bible yourself. And second of all, you can hear it in a sermon and someone can tell you how things were, but also it's sometimes hard to picture, you know, what it would have been like to live in the first century, live in the time in the Jewish culture with the synagogue, trying to follow all those rules of the Torah or whatnot. So that's how they are implementing it here. And that's, these scenes are important for that reason. Then we get Joanna is sneaking out of the court, and then the Salome's trainer says that they're pushing her too hard and she maybe needs to back down. And Herodias is saying how John the Baptist insulted her and she needs the dance to be perfect, and Joanna tries to see John the Baptist. She goes to go see John the Baptist, and she's has very wealthy. She's trying to bribe the guard to let her see him, and he's being moved to a new cell where he will most likely, unfortunately, be executed. And John the Baptist says, "The way of the Lord is prepared," as he's being carried out. And David Amito, who plays John the Baptist, always does a great job. His acting as John the Baptist is always the best. Like, he nails the role. Everyone, as I always say in the show, is perfectly casted. They all play their roles extremely well. Everybody's a great actor. Herodias, Salome, John the Baptist, Joanna's husband, everybody. Herod Antipas, you know, everybody in the show. All great actors. They're all great at their craft. Steadicam Dan, he does a great job holding the camera. Everybody just is the best of the best. That's why they hire them. They don't hire them based on religion or belief or if they fit a certain agenda or belief or worldview or any of that. Which is awesome, because then we get the best quality content, because, you know, if you limit it to just Christians, not every Christian is going to be the best filmmaker. They're not going to be the best camera operator. They're not going to be the best actor. They're not going to be the best producer or whatever. So just ensuring the greatest art, and these people, if they're willing to help a cause that is Christian or that is religious, then why not we return the favor by allowing them to be a part of it, giving them the chance to be a part of something that maybe they don't specifically agree with or understand, but giving them the chance to open their mind, to explore something in a way that maybe they haven't thought about it before. Because I, in my opinion, 90% of the ways or reasons why people don't believe in Jesus or religion or God or whatever is just misunderstanding. They've let the people, imperfect people of God, or misinformation distract them from a perfect God. So therefore, breaking down any barriers and saying, hey, you know, Christians aren't all, you know, they get a bad reputation, bad rep. And they're being inviting to them and letting them come into this work environment. That's awesome. The Chosen Family is one of the best ever. And saying, hey, you know, you can work with us. You can do all this stuff. It's awesome. It's awesome. So then we come to Thomas and Rhema. And they're sitting by the dock and they're talking. And Barnaby and Shula are watching and chaperoning to make sure. I believe they're making sure they don't touch each other, because I think that's Jewish law at this point, maybe. I think that's why that gets a reaction there later. It was hard to hear some things in the theater because everybody was laughing and being loud and having a good time, which is awesome. That's why I go to the theater. That's why the theater experience is a thing, and that's why it's so epic. We feel an electric energy there in the room, all super excited to see here and see this amazing thing. But sometimes you do miss dialogue bits, so I believe that's why Barnaby and Shula are watching. Thomas says he's getting better at accepting things he can't explain, you know, old doubting Thomas. And Acophany is still against their marriage, but Rhema explains how she found a loophole in the tradition to where basically Thomas and Rhema can get married with the chaperone or someone else. She claims that Jesus is their new surrogate father since they've devoted their lives to Jesus, so therefore Jesus can approve them, and if Thomas can find an item of value for betrothal, then they can get betrothed. And basically, so she found a big loophole in the Jewish law and tradition, which says that she has to get permission from Kafni, and now she doesn't have to do that. So John and Jesus will be witness, and he just has to give something of value to her. So just find an object to give to her. She says, not like Ruth and Boaz with the whole way that they met, which is a funny reference to the story of Ruth. If you haven't read the book of Ruth, awesome. Which I'm assuming most people have read the Bible, but if you haven't, I would recommend it. And then he asked her to be with him. He asked her to marry him. Thomas asked Rhema, and then they hold hands, and Barnaby and Shula react. You know, Barnaby and Shula are always great comic relief characters, and you know, what is a good show A show is only as good as its comic relief characters, and the comic relief characters in The Chosen, always great. This is a great scene, funny. It's always good to see. I like the storyline between Thomas and Raymond. It's cute. It's funny. You know, it keeps us entertained. It's giving you a picture into what Jewish marriage is like in the first century. Again, you know, it's not saying this is what happened, but it's giving you an inside look to how it gets down and that kind of thing. So, love that scene. So then the party starts, and they're all together at this party that Herod Antipas is throwing, and Salome is kind of trying to get, or sorry, Herodias is trying to get Herod drunk a little bit, you know, just trying to get him a little bit more, you know, tipsy and able to be influenced to where he can make decisions that will work in Herodias' favor. So someone is not there, though, and that is Joanna, because she is quickly writing to warn Jesus. She's going to Capernaum to warn the disciples. That's what she's doing. So she's quickly getting out of there to try to tell the disciples. And we see Joanna writing, and then they introduce Salome. And if Herod is pleased, as Joanna's husband says, he can't say no to anything. So then the dance starts, which is a cool scene. It's shot very cool. The set is nice, you know, with the fire. The chosen lighting system is cool. Well, how the way they have the different torches set up, you know, because they can't use real lights. And a lot of times they have scenes at night like this, where it looks like they're in a Roman courtyard. Fun fact, this is actually this Jerusalem set in Utah, and they just dress it up differently to make it look different. So that's awesome. And I was able to see where they set it all up and how it looked. It's very cool. So she starts dancing, and then everybody claps for her. And he says he will give her anything. And she asks for the head of John the Baptist. And we get this cool thing where John the Baptist's birth is intercut with his death. And just a cool way that The Chosen likes to, you know, they're not just going to show you, here's how John the Baptist died, and here's him dying. They're showing, also, cutting back to his birth and showing how he was born. And he's brought into the execution room. And this is the first time we see Jesus in season 4. We finally see Jesus. He's sitting by himself, you know, just staring into the fire. I guess because he knows what's coming, right? He knows what's happening, everything that's going on right now. King Herod actually requested that John the Baptist's head be cut off and put onto a silver wedding banquet plate. And he mentions how he's going to a wedding when he gets to heaven. And then the security guards don't really understand. They say, are those your final words? And he says, you wouldn't get it. Now, this is where I was mentioning earlier in the spoiler-free section. For those who have seen the episodes, you know what I'm talking about now. It was interesting to me, and that was a bold choice. I think this was a bold choice that they decided to say. Like, definitively, the Roman soldier was writing down, like, these are John the Baptist's last words. You wouldn't get it. But I do think it's symbolizing, you know, how John the Baptist was preparing the way for Jesus. He was preparing the way for the Lamb of God. And most people he told didn't get it. They didn't get that Jesus was the Son of God, and John the Baptist, at some one point, he was unsure, which is why he sent his followers when he was in prison to ask Jesus, are you really the Messiah? And I just think this is symbolic of that. That's what I think. I don't know if it's that's what it was intended to be, but at least the impression I got was just, it has a double meaning. You know, he's saying you wouldn't get it, as in these people don't get it, that Jesus is the Son of God. He's the true Messiah, and not many people around him did get it. So, Jesus receives the news, and we see his name is John. Zechariah writes it on the tablet, and he speaks. He gets to speak. And as John is being put down on the table to get his head chopped off, he sees a light coming outside from the window, and he sees clouds open up, and there's a lamb there, which is so awesome. The symbolism of him preparing the way for the Lamb of God, and how when John the Baptist was walking with Andrew, he said, he pointed at Jesus and said, there is the Lamb of God, the spotless Lamb. And just awesome. Very cool that they put that in there. Just cool scene. Cool how it comes about. And then we see Jesus sobbing. Great acting by Jonathan. Great acting by David Amino. Again, he's awesome. And everybody is awesome in the show, as I said before. But specifically, particularly awesome performances in this episode. So he says, thank you. And then we get Simon, Thaddeus, Little James, and Nathaniel all together. And then James and John come in, and Rhema, Tamar, and Mary as well, and they talk about how Thomas and Rhema have tied the knot, as well as how Zebedee and James and John have made a deal with the synagogue, awesome for the business. And then Joanna comes to the group, and we see John the Baptist's birth, and she tells Andrew about the unfortunate news, and he reacts about as well as we all expect Andrew to react. And they say, we were prepared. And there was a reference, nice reference to John chapter 1, where John in this scene is talking about, you know, how John was just sent to prepare the way. And that was a reference, nice reference to how John writes that in his book later on. They're referencing that. And then Zechariah tells baby John that he will prepare the way. And he starts repeating, I believe it's Luke chapter 1, verse 68, where he starts repeating, "Blessed be the Lord of God of Israel, who has visited and redeemed his people." I believe he starts repeating that, so that's also very cool as well. And this scene, again, like I said before, like, it's not like, it doesn't go into full, like, melancholy, super depressing music, and everybody's just crying and sad. Like, there is a little bit of levity here, which I was surprised to see. I said this in my video on YouTube. It's interesting the way that they decided to portray this. It wasn't just, which, you know, if a show takes itself completely seriously and every scene is just somber and, oh, this is so sad, then it becomes, you know, there's a fine line to walk of taking yourself too seriously and also putting in a little bit of levity in there and not taking yourself too seriously. Because when you do that, then it also does become off as campy. So there's a fine line to walk there. And The Chosen walks that line extremely well, because we do have lots of laughs and fun times, as well as very somber and emotional moments. So I think here they're trying to balance that, because, you know, if they go, it becomes like soap opera-y and like, oh, everybody's so sad. And it's kind of laughable. It kind of does suck you out. Because naturally, as Jesus says in episode 2, which we'll talk about next time, there's a lot of happiness often acquainted with grief. You know, you laugh the most at a funeral. I can attest to that. So, all in all, Jesus comes to the group at the end of the episode with ashes on his face and his sleeves ripped, which is how the Jews reacted to death back then. And great episode. Actually, the more I talked about it, the more I liked it. You know, walking through it again and remembering all the events that happened. It was a great episode. And definitely one of the best. You know, they just get better as the seasons go along, in my opinion. And I really enjoyed this episode. It was awesome. You know, all the intercutting with John the Baptist's birth, I thought it was a smart choice, because, again, The Chosen never does big emotional moments like these and just lets them speak for themselves. They always got to tie it back to some other scene or some other way it was prophesized or some way it's tied in with something. Because, you know, all the cross references in the Bible, all the prophecies that come true in the life of Jesus, you know, they got to portray that in the show. And that makes it more interesting, more entertaining. And it makes you want to read your Bible more. You go, oh, that's right, that was prophesized back then. Or that was, you know, they set this up earlier and that kind of thing. So awesome. Awesome, awesome stuff. Some of the best stuff in the show in this episode. And the symbolism with John looking at the lamb, awesome. It was portrayed a bit more happier than I would have expected, but, you know, it was a welcome surprise. And we're going to get into all the sadder stuff later in the episode, or in the season, sorry, in season 4. So that'll be fun. Not fun, but, you know, we'll see it later. So thank you so much for listening to this review, my review of season 4, episode 1. And we're back with the podcast, guys. It's the month of prosperity for everybody. We get to talk again. You know, I miss talking with the Chosen community. And whenever it's off season, it's sad, you know. I know the Chosen is working very hard to produce these episodes, so I'm willing to wait as long as possible. But, you know, it's good to be back, guys. So thank you so much for listening. Again, I hope you enjoyed a podcast episode made specifically for the podcast, not made for the YouTube channel. You will not see this on YouTube. So thank you so much for listening again. I said that 3 times now. You can tell it's been a while. I need to get back in my groove. So I'll see you guys next time where we talk about season 4, episode 2. Again, we don't know any of the titles of these episodes yet. We won't know that until they come to the app, I think. But I hope you enjoyed seeing the episodes in theaters. I hope you were able to mingle with your fellow Chosen family, and maybe you'll go again. I know you guys, some of you will probably go 10 times to the theater, which, if I had the money to do that, I would. But, you know, once or twice is enough for me, because I write it all down and I retain everything. And I'm going to be doing tons of breakdowns on my YouTube channel. I will want to mention, February 3rd through the 10th, I am on a cruise. I will actually be, you know, tropical locations. I'm on vacation with the family. So all of this stuff is pre-recorded, all the stuff you're seeing on YouTube. But go check out, I'm going to be coming out with lots of videos on YouTube. All this stuff is pre-recorded, though, just letting you know. And so thank you so much for listening again. I'll see you guys in my next episode. I'm not going to say thank you for listening anymore. See you guys next time. Binge Jesus.